Welcome, Lori Fritch. Thanks
Hey,
for
how are
coming and
you?
doing this with me.
Of course, I'm super pumped to be here.
Awesome. Okay, for those of you that don't know Lori, she is an assistant director in the Department of Hokie Wellness and has been creating and implementing college health and wellness programming at Virginia Tech since 2000. So her expertise includes sleep, sexual health, body image, nicotine addiction, and treatment, and of course, tech. So, including how social media and phones affect students' wellness. So, this issue of phones and social media amongst Gen Z seems to be top of mind for many of us, but it can be hard to take a stab at fixing it. So, what was the final straw for you when you decided that something needed to change at Virginia Tech?
Yeah, so I, as you just stated, I have been working in the health and wellness realm with college students for quite a while. And each year we take our students on, we do some training with our peer educators, and we were taking our students on a rafting trip that year. And I'd been teaching in the classroom and sort of seeing how students' dynamics were changing as far as like even our in our meetings, if we were on a break, students would be go off and be on their phones instead of engaging with each other. And then some professors that I was guest lecturing for would be like, we now have a no laptop policy in our classroom. So, we could sort of see hints of things changing as they relate to technology. So we asked our students to keep their phones away during the rafting trip, and it takes about like 2 hours to get there. And we did our rafting and came home, and all of our students were like, oh, it's so nice to not have to be on my phone. And it was really in that moment that I was like, you guys can choose to not be on your phone whenever you want. And that was the moment when they were like, no, we can't. Like, we have to respond. People expect an immediate response. And to me, that was such a difficult thing to hear because it meant that our phones were no longer a tool to help us, that they were a distraction from all of the things, all of the excitement, all of the learning, all of the deep relationships that could potentially exist, especially while in college.
Yeah, that's very true. That's actually similar to the realization I had as well with when I really realized that something bigger needed to happen was when I got rid of my phone, trying to do what you would have encouraged them to do, just get off your phone, don't use it. And I just experienced a world of isolation when I was in high school, because you have to have it. It's just everyone's socializing right now with it. So that's interesting. So from your side of it, one person can only do so much. So what are some actions that you believe institutions need to take to make ideal digital wellness more possible for students?
So that is the million-dollar question, Sean, right? So, well, since 2016, I really have been talking with students, working with students, assessing our programs to try to figure out like what do our students want to see? What is the messaging that's really going to engage students and flip the switch so that the norm is more students are off of their phone, more students are choosing real life versus scrolling, especially again in on the campus setting. I say just like hit the messaging at every angle. So what we've been trying to do is, we were creating a lot of workshops on campus, and but again, students had to see that the workshop existed and then choose to come to a workshop, which is a pretty big ask, especially when the student's already going to class all day. So then, of course, we were trying to create presence on campus where we were doing just like quick outreaches to engage our students. So if a student happened to be walking by a booth, they would get a little bit of education in that moment. And that's sort of how we functioned all pre-pandemic. So I started creating digital well-being programming in 2017, and implementing it that year. And we were gaining a lot of traction. And then COVID hit. And even before COVID, I knew, gosh, programming could happen all day. And we're a 35,000 plus campus. We weren't going to reach the students that we needed to reach everywhere. So post-COVID, we have been working very hard to get messaging into the residence halls, just like signs everywhere, to get more into academic classrooms. So whether it's I go and teach classes, or another thing that's been successful is we've created a series of slides and short videos that professors can use to plug and play. It takes the pressure off of a professor because it says from Hokie Wellness, sort of states, like, oh, you want to have better focus, put your phone away, and here's three tips and some reasons why that's going to help you. And that messaging comes directly from students. So when we ask students, how can we create a more digitally well environment at Virginia Tech, students really wanted to learn about why specifically using our technology more mindfully is going to benefit them. So that's one of our very large target messaging areas. They also want to have classrooms be engaging. So a lot of them spoke to the professor not just reading off of a slide deck, but creating pen and paper opportunities, creating moments for conversation and interaction. Some also noted that when a professor says, hey, in my class, technology goes away, that people are more engaged. And it's interesting that students are seeing it and naming it. So the classroom space is also a very, obviously, we're at a college. It's an imperative place for students to receive messaging about digital well-being. So we have residence halls, we've got classroom spaces, and then we have living spaces, or sorry, community engagement spaces. So dining halls, library, student centers, where we're putting phone boxes, which are essentially invitations to put your phones away, and conversation cards in those. They also come with banners to elevate reasons to be more digitally well. They're fun, they're playful, and all really rooted in positive messaging. And I think, Sean, as you know, like, no one's going to respond to shame. And so
Yeah, definitely.
our stuff is all about, hey, this isn't your fault. This is how technology was designed. So let's figure out ways to use the tool that it is, but to live life as it is meant to live.
Wow. That is really cool to hear your like comprehensive overview of how you are approaching this issue on your campus. Like it's actually I don't think I've heard a breakdown of okay, because college, you've got your dorm, you've got your classes, you've got the dining hall and like hanging out with friends around campus and community areas. Like that is overall like some big major areas of college. And it's cool to see you guys actively targeting those areas and like, okay, how can we rebuild, what once was this interconnected, very community-oriented, like social place. And it's really cool to see you guys doing that.
Thanks, Sean.
Yeah. So, things used to be different. College campuses didn't always have this problem. And you actually graduated from Virginia Tech yourself.
Did.
So when you walk around the campus today, how does it feel different from when you attended the university?
Oh gosh, Sean, that's a big question.
It's an important contrast.
In some ways, We have this beautiful green space on campus known as the Drill Field, and it really is a place that has always been full of life. And even to this day, when people go there, they're going to relax, they're going to maybe play ultimate frisbee, they're hammocking, which is that's a little bit different. We didn't have hammocks in 1994 all over the Drill Field. So I would say that particular like liveliness still looks the same, but when you're walking across campus, you will see on the same space, most heads are down. So instead of maybe talking to someone in between class or just like looking around at this gorgeous space, you're really seeing just heads low, heads down in devices, headphones in, maybe someone just like disconnected from the sounds. And you'll see at bus stops, heads down. I'm not going to say everyone engaged at bus stops when I was in college either, because you're like surrounded. I mean, I might talk to strangers. You'd probably talk to strangers too, Sean.
Yeah, probably.
And then in the community spaces, again, like you would see people talking more, and I will say people are talking, but it's always sort of with that presence of another device, if not two devices, laptop, phone, and conversation seems to be always connected to something that's going on inside of our devices, and in the classroom. Again, this is why we're targeting all of these spaces. Like in the classroom, you would talk to people before class and goof around, and you wouldn't be shopping online in a class. You might be doodling, you might be wishing that you were shopping, but there wasn't the opportunity to be distracted by that. And so sometimes we just had to embrace what the professor was saying, whether or not they were exciting. For me, Sean, I think you had asked me at one point, like, why is this so important to you? And I would say like those first few weeks of school when things feel so uncomfortable and are so overwhelming, now students can really seek solitude and comfort in their devices so they can talk to their family and friends from back home instead and avoid the discomfort of having to connect with people that are new, having to have chit chat moments that are uncomfortable, because they're still able to stay connected in meaningful ways back home. Not to take away from that, that's great, but it delays the ability for us to create meaningful relationships as freshmen on campus. And when I came to school, I had to talk to people. And for me, just making those small connections does create that sense of belonging. And I met this guy, Jim, my first day of school, and he told me that he was going to join the crew team. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. And he was telling me about it. And I was like, whew, I cannot do that. That sounds scary and something like something I could never be good at. But because I had that conversation with him, I really thought about it all year long. And Jim and I were like always sort of acquaintances, but not, we didn't become the best of friends. But then I couldn't stop thinking about rowing, and because I have a deep love for water. And that next year, I was like, you know what? I spent the summer training and I joined the crew team. And I was very lonely in my freshman year because I couldn't find my people. And once I joined the crew team my sophomore year, like everything about my college experience changed. And I had my people. I slept better. I got better grades. It was literally like one decision that changed the path of my entire life. And I think students, when they use their phones, they could miss out on all of those small conversations that could lead to the next most important decision that could change their life. And that's a shame. Like that makes me sad that people are missing out on the skill of small talk and also the opportunity for more things in their college career.
Yeah, that's thank you, first of all, for that story. That's awesome. And it's really inspiring to hear that, you know, if you find your people and you find your groove, it's totally doable to have that amazing experience to really excel and socially and academically and even athletically. And so this kind of brings up an interesting point, I feel like, that is specifically directed towards, you know, collegiate well-being rather than something more like a high school or middle school, which is really having to find your people, and you have to do it yourself. It's not done for you necessarily. You're not totally on your own, but all right, well, right back into it. Sorry, everybody, internet went out. But as I was saying, there's this natural kind of discomfort where you're in a new place, you're in a new environment, you're in a new experience you haven't had before, and you kind of have to have that conversation in the dorm hallway, even if it's uncomfortable. And that will lead you to kind of this natural progression of thinking about crew, like, oh man, should I do that? Maybe I could do that. And then eventually if you find it after maybe a year, you know, that freshman year is tough. So how, like, and so now there's this stunting of that where the nest doesn't get as prickly anymore. It doesn't have to be as uncomfortable. It's almost like a prolonging of becoming stagnant, not having to take that not being forced to take that leap. So how, and if you had to, like, hypothetically take away realistic things that have to make change occur, what how could we change that for the future in a way that doesn't eliminate tech, but how could we try to reinstill this natural occurrence of college students being able to be forced to get involved just by, you know, their surroundings and life? How can we reinstate that for the future?
So one of the things that I have been experimenting with this year is these weekly challenges, because again, recommended by students, like we need to know why it's beneficial. We need to continually be exposed to it. So within our weekly challenges, they sort of center around core areas of focus, relationships, academics, and experience VT, so or like experience campus life. And so within, if a student goes to that challenge, they just like scan the QR code and they can learn more about like tangible steps to explore that challenge, and why that particular challenge is beneficial to them. So my hope is that students see these challenges and are triggered to try them or at least have them in their mind. They may not think every single challenge is for them, but just the constant exposure in all of the different places they are experiencing campus life, hopefully will help them make that mental shift. But when I think about Virginia Tech, does an amazing job of having just so many experiential opportunities for our students. Just there is no want for a campus event. Every day, a student could probably find about 100 different things to become involved with.
Cool.
But it is hard at the end of our day to, you know, we have our long day of classes and then we're back in our residence hall. It's hard to understand that going back out and doing something or having a conversation in real life is going to be more enriching than scrolling. It may not be hard to understand that, but it's hard to talk yourself into doing it, you know, even though you know, like, oh, I'm gonna scroll again. Our students are like, I hate it when I scroll, like I go on my phone to scroll for 10 minutes and then I've wasted an hour or 2 hours. But we somehow need to get our students to just practice. One thing that I'm doing, Sean, that I'm trying to gain movement on with our students is just 5 minutes a day. So really, I think that all of the hard stuff comes within those first 5 minutes, right? So my goal is to start playing the piano again. And if I just attempt it for 5 minutes a day, it's not the 30 minutes that follow those 5 minutes. It's the 5 minutes of getting up off of the couch, of finding a piece of music that I'm going to play, of actually sitting down and doing it. If I can't do those first 5 minutes, that's actually really good knowledge for me because I can then think about like, well, why didn't it work today? And how can I do it differently tomorrow? Typically, once a person decides to put themselves in a situation that is a little bit more work, once they're there, they're there. And they're like, oh, I made it here, you know? Typically, if you make it to class, you're like, whew, I'm really glad I made it to class. You might leave early, but you're more likely to obviously stay. It's the getting there part that's the hardest. But too, Sean, I really do hope to create more environmental challenges and cues that motivate our students and remind our students to choose life, to choose real conversations, to choose an activity versus scrolling. But I think it's just asking them questions and to create environments that are conducive to that. So putting more phone boxes in spaces. I know you and I had talked about creating our, community oases for people, places where people can go and phones are left out
Exempt.
of that scenario. They're invited to be put in their bag. And when students enter that space, whether it's a phone-free dining zone or a phone-free space lounge in a residence hall, that when students go there, they know that they're going to be with other people who have also chosen to go there. But again, I think I was thinking about this before we came on this call together. It's almost it's reversing social norms. So right now, observationally, many students are choosing to be on their phones. We need to, again, reverse the norm and create spaces that invite them to do so. One of the funniest things to me that I never realized, like there's a benefit to procrastination if you're doing it well. So if you think about when I was in college, procrastination looked like I am going to talk to everyone and anything in my residence hall so that I do not have to study. And looking back on it, I was like, man, that was like really beneficial because we would just do stupid stuff together. You'd be like rolling your chair up and down the hallway. But like those are memories and those are bonding moments that are facilitating healthy relationships. Whereas now, if I say, oh, I'm going to procrastinate, it most likely looks like scrolling.
And that's not that forced beneficial, behavior. It's like, again, bringing it back to that nest. It's like the phone has become this inhibitor of this natural progression of young adults where, you're forced to go goof around with your friends. You're forced to go talk to everybody because you don't want to do your work because you are a young adult student who doesn't want to do your work. And that's part of what you're learning. But this natural system has been disrupted. I really like what you said about 5 minutes a day. And because that's so true. Anything that is hard to do needs to be done over a long period of time. You're not going to do it in one day, And so I think it's cool to think that, okay, we've accepted it. Students now have a harder time, socializing, whether it's because the bull of their it's because they have socially more prone to social anxiety, because they have, not practice socializing as much. So it is a hard thing. It's almost like relearning how to play the piano. It's
Absolutely.
relearning how to be comfortable in these social situations. So to think that, a message to students could be 5 minutes of conversation a day, like 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. And then that almost seems like, oh, I could totally do 5 minutes,
Five
Or
minutes.
maybe it does seem a little scary to do 5 minutes. And then, like you said, they'll be like, why can't I do 5 minutes? And then it's just this, it's this thought-provoking concept, and to apply that to socializing, I think is kind of a new age futuristic way to think about it, because most people looking at this issue, you know, grew up like you did, where talking is totally normal, and talking would never be something as challenging as learning the piano because you've just done it since you can remember. So I think that that could be an important shift in education, especially for students, to understand this is normal. It's just like relearning any other skill, you know? And since we now feel, everybody feels like you're saying, they tell you, I hate scrolling, I don't like it when I scroll. And so if they realize, like, hey, this is just like anything else, just talk for 5 minutes a day and you'll be fine. I think that's an important shift that could alter and bring back this prickly nest concept.
I think that people do feel, like you said, they feel anxious, and I think they almost feel like ashamed that they can't talk without feeling anxious or talk without their phone present. They're like, oh my gosh, I'm the only one who can't do this. And so even normalizing that, like, hey, did you know most people are struggling to have this chit chat moment? So we have created a tool. So we have phone conversation cards that we put in the boxes. And one strategy that I hope to use next year is to use the conversation cards or conversation topics in as students are coming to campus, that each room is equipped with conversational topics or conversation cards. So immediately, students are playing around with it, whether they're mocking it or really using it as a conversation tool, just to make it a little bit easier. It's a tool. But I think too, remembering helping our students remember their most meaningful relationships. So asking them to think about, like, who's your best friend? And how long do you think it took you to become best friends with this person? We want that immediacy, that comfort, that sense of depth in a relationship that we have with our longest friends. We want that when we come to campus, like right away. And we so often forget how long it took to build that kind of meaningful relationship, and that we have to start with those small sort of chit chat conversations in order to get to the deeper conversation.
Yeah, most definitely. I think it all starts with small actions, and you know, whether that small action comes from having to choose it over your phone, or whether it comes from, you know, forced procrastination from an assignment, that is a step that the student does need to take. So, you know, as you know, I'm working on this issue from the student's perspective, and you know, I do this by, I started the Reconnect movement, where students can kind of create their own community. They want to take leadership for hanging out phone free. And so, you know, that is one option. If they wanted to start a Reconnect club, they could. But what are some other things you think, maybe similar to this 5 minutes a day thing? What are some other things that students can do to take advantage of? You know, I know Virginia Tech has a lot of options for people to get involved, but in general, how could a student take it upon themselves to improve to their wellness?
Well, to go along with sort of the idea of the Reconnect movement, we, as I said, we have over 800 student organizations. So one of the things that I'd like to work on next year is, identifying events. And we have actually done this in the past, but I would like it to be a more regular and consistent thing with specific events on campus. But hey, this isn't a device-free event. You'll be checking your phone at the door. So that students know, oh, cool. Like, I know that I want to be device-free more, and I want to be around other people who are device-free. So I'm going to engage in this event because it's kind of like laid out for me. It's almost like sometimes we do better when there are rules because we don't have to have complete ownership of it. We can be like, oh, they're creating that safe space for me, and it feels a little bit easier. Something else, Christina Crook of the JOMO movement and I created a series of interventions, and we created a 4-week digital well-being challenge. And one of the things that we've done with that is I've integrated it into some living learning communities. And so the whole living learning community in a residence hall together goes through each of the 4 weeks of challenges. So that's a really great way for a student to practice it and for all of the students in that space to be doing the same topic area. So one of the weeks is about relationships, and it's students are more likely to understand, oh, this week's relationships, we should put our phones away in conversation. Like, there's phone boxes in their residence halls during this 4-week intervention. Oh, we're supposed to hang out in lounges together and like talk. Oh, let's use these conversation cards. So again, that's a really great way if a school has living learning communities to kind of gain momentum, have the residence hall doing challenges together. A student can also look on the Virginia Tech website on digital well-being, and anyone is welcome to access that content. So there are currently 16 weeks of the challenges that all have learning engagement and resources that someone can follow, someone can build those skills. And I think that, the whole goal of a challenge is try one a week. We don't have to make all of the changes at once, and not every single change is going to resonate with us or apply to our lifestyle. I think that the most meaningful thing is to really think about, how am I using my phone? Does it help me with who I want to be? So it's really sitting down and thinking about what are my values? What do I want to get out of my college experience? I have students, when I get to work with them, identify what are your top three things you want to, your top three goals you want to get out of your college experience. And then I have them write down very specific activities that are going to help them achieve their goals. And finally, I have them identify, like, what's my daily average screen time? And what are the top five apps that I am using in a week? And then they cross-check. Does your app actually support you achieving any one of your goals? And if it doesn't, they just cross it out. And there's no shame in using that app. It's just that if they really want to be working towards relationships or having fun experiences, they can use that time they were using on that app that doesn't support that to be more mindful about the time and how they're spending their time. And I always use the example of, it doesn't even mean that they have to be off of their phone. It could be, instead of being on Instagram, if your goal is to have more fun, you might be using time on your phone to search for fun activities to do this weekend. And then you may be texting a friend to do that activity with you this weekend. So again, it's not necessarily a detox, because that's not realistic, but it is intentional. And a student can feel really good about that time.
Yeah, I love that exercise too. Just, hey, what do you value? What do you want to do in college? And no kid's going to be like, I want to sit on my dorm room for 5 hours and watch Netflix. Like, no kid is going to say that.
No one says that.
It really just shows exactly. No person is going to say that. And so it's really cool to then just kind of lead along and, say, okay, now what are the apps? And then, oh, do these help you? And then I think that most students are gonna, they're gonna have TikTok, YouTube, Netflix, like up at the top. They're gonna wanna cross those out. They're gonna be like, man, I wanna have experience. I don't wanna do this, And I think that's a really cool distinction to be made, because I think many people that aren't as familiar with this issue, even students and adults alike, could think, oh, well, all Gen Z just wants to be on their phone all the time. They love technology. They're just always on social media and phones. But it's like, this is everybody who's going to resist, Netflix at the end of a hard day, it's like it's a bad, and it's not something that we're just like, oh, we want this all the time. It's like, we actually want the same valuable experiences that you had when you were in college. It's just we have this extra barrier now that we have to fight through. And I think it's a really cool thing to be paired with, like you said, where you can kind of take it off the responsibility of them,
Yeah.
and you can create these spaces where, okay, phones aren't allowed here, like Reconnect, like something like, connection, like the oasises that I want to create on these campuses for, where this student doesn't have to be like, hey guys, let's put away our phone. It's like,
Right.
coming from this organization, we're going to create oases on your campus. That way you can walk in and be like, oh, I guess we have to put our phones away. And then all this amazing, connection can occur without this, the stress, have this social pressure having to be on the student. You can just enjoy it the same way that you got to just enjoy socializing occurring.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, those are, that's, I love that exercise.
Thanks. We like it too. And I love that you said, it doesn't have to be student specific. These conversations are true for college students, for my colleagues, for people who people in their 70s, 80s, because everyone is trying to figure out how to use technology. And it is a distraction. It can entertain us for a little bit because that's how they were designed. But when we're just using it as an escape from everything, no one, I don't think people really want to miss out on living. It just we're tired. And at the end of the day, it is hard to give up convenience and ease for something more meaningful.
Yeah, it's kind of, it is how we live, but it's almost frustrating to have to, it feels like I should be ashamed to not be choosing what would really make me happy, and I'm choosing the thing that's not making me happy. But it's like, it's like that added barrier between the discomfort of forcing you to leave the nest that will inevitably make you feel better, but now we have this new hurdle to jump over. And
Exactly.
so I had another question about what the difference is like working with students for their digital wellness versus working with faculty, because I believe you work with both for Hookie Wellness, right?
Well, in my capacity, my job is to serve students, but I do get the
Okay.
privilege of sometimes getting to work with faculty as well, just because it becomes blurry, especially when I'm trying to design interventions in the classroom. We do have that overlap of me talking to faculty to try to figure out, well, what's the best way to help our students? And then they're like, well, we're all feeling digital overwhelm. And then the conversation goes on to them, and but it's really fun because I can then share with our students, you know what? Our faculty are feeling the same things. They feel overwhelmed. They feel distracted, and it's frustrating on all of the ends. It sort of makes everyone more human, which is what we ultimately need is to understand humanity better. So,
Right.
with faculty. I think that one, the biggest similarity is how no one, students or faculty, feel like they can ever disconnect. Everyone feels the need to respond as quickly as possible, that their work follows them home, that there's just never a time where everything is done or all of the emails have been responded to or all of the Canvas notifications have been managed. It's ongoing, and I think that that's really hard. Another commonality between students and faculty is how we use our phones at the end of the day to relax or how it builds up our anxiety. So if someone is, doing email late into the night and then they go to bed, that's stressful because they're probably still thinking about everything that they have to do. And or we're scrolling and it's hard to make a choice to do something different because technology enables us to be doing work all of the time. And some people, especially just extremely ambitious faculty, they'll continue doing work. They're passionate about their work, but life can't always be all work all the time. And I think that if you don't have permission to disconnect, even if that permission is from yourself, because a lot of times the mindset is, well, I still have more to do, so I'm going to do more. Because it's here, because I can access it. It's not like we shut the door to our office at the end of the day and all of our work is in that space. It just follows us wherever we go. And we know that, even the presence of a cell phone can drain our cognitive capacity. So we're just subconsciously having to ignore even the presence of a device, picking it up. So we may have our phones right next to us, and we could still be thinking about our families, but then we're also sort of thinking about, oh, I have more I have to do. I have to ignore that phone for right now so that I can be present. So I think that being able to set boundaries and feeling okay with that, giving yourself permission to have fun is a direction that we all need to move. And Catherine Price, who is the author of How to Break Up with Your Phone and The Power of Fun, she's brilliant. She has done some really groundbreaking research on fun and why we actually need it, and how having fun, real fun, actually can make us more productive. And it's essential for our well-being. And so I do try to do some education for our faculty and our students on giving ourselves permission to have fun and what real fun looks like, and exploring what's fun to each and every one of us. Because again, my mantra is like, definitely I work hard, I'm very passionate about the work that I do. I find a lot of purpose and meaning in it, but I also want to live outside of here and enjoy my friends and my family and what the world has to offer. So I encourage people to go check out Catherine Price's work as well and start exploring fun factors, because I think that's really cool. And to be able to give ourselves permission to have fun is something that I think can help all of us.
That is a really important part of this whole scope of this issue, because I think I focus on the social aspect of it a lot because that's my area that I've chosen to, focus
Of
my
course.
mission right now. But that is such a good point of how it your work is on your phone goes with you everywhere. So not only do you have the option of working, but you have people that are expecting you to be working at all times sometimes. And that can be, I mean, of course, that sounds draining just thinking about it. And we experience it every day, And so I think that that is a whole other area I don't think about as much, but that definitely would bleed over to faculty, working adults, and now kids having to maybe, having computers and schoolwork and emails and then also, for students more, maybe more, slightly more intensely than adults, like having to then use technology to socialize. And I was listening to the audiobook for Jonathan Haidt's Anxious Generation,
Just bought it,
and
but I haven't read it yet.
yeah, it's awesome.
I'm
You're
sure.
gonna love it. And he was talking about how, a key part of development in childhood and early adolescence and adolescence is this play. Play is so important, and it starts more physical and more, games and stuff like that. And then as you go into adolescence, it's more like social play, like where you're joking around, you're teasing each other, you're messing, things like that. And he mentioned that socializing in the sense of just socializing for the sake of socializing, no specific goal, just to do it. Like when you were, procrastinating your work, you were just talking for the sake of talking because it was more fun than doing your work. And that is where you really get that developmental, where play goes into that, plays the role of develop you know, developing your ability to socialize, your ability to communicate with others, and interact with that part of humanity, which is so important, you know, connecting. And what he mentions is that, you know, the time you spend on social media is not the same unstructured playing just for the sake of playing. You are going on there to do a specific thing, which is to curate this post, to curate an image, to hopefully derive a desired response of a certain number of likes or to gain a certain number of followers. And this is just to try to connect. And this is what people have been, you know, seduced into by these apps is, oh, this is socializing. This is a social thing to do. When in the actual scope of the humanity of the reality of what you are doing is much more similar to work, which is, you know, something that would follow you home. Like, oh, you know, I have to write this email to make sure that this person knows this. It's like, oh, I have to make this post to make sure that they know that I was with these people, to make sure that I was, you know, make sure that they know I was at the beach, to make sure they know I was having fun. So it's like sucking all of the actual fun and enjoyment and developmental, you know, value out of this social experience. And so, you know, for these students now, it's almost like you have to take this work home of socializing. You don't get to rest from all the pressures of high school and middle school. And that can be so, so challenging for a student.
And I, oh gosh, so much. I love all that you said there. And I think it's cool whenever I teach a class, I start off with what is everything you like about your device? And, so that people know we're not here to demonize devices, that they are great tools. And then I talk about like, what is everything you dislike, either about your own use or the use of others around you? And they name that the constant need to post, the feeling that I always have to be on, to know that no matter what I do, people could be taking photos or videos of me. Like, it doesn't feel safe to just be there. Mm-hmm. When I think about looking on social media, those posts to me they're just aspirational. It's not a true reflection of what's going on in someone's life. It's just the aspiration of what a person wants to portray is going on, so that other people look at it and think, oh, I want to be doing that too. If we all posted, of course, about our own lives, it'd be messy. We would be, sometimes I do that just for fun. I'll be like, same. Here's my ridiculous greasy hair today, everyone.
Yeah.
And like my daughters will take pictures of me and show them to their friends. I'm like, okay, well, I guess this is it. Me in that same blue sweatshirt I wear every day.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to always feel like we have to be on, but I love what you just said about it's work to have to post all of the time and have to create a fun caption and get people to like it and then check back on the like. That sounds very exhausting.
Yeah, it's definitely just, I mean, what he calls it, the great rewiring of childhood.
Yes.
It just takes all the humanity and, you know, all the things that were evolutionarily designed naturally to have student or, you know, kids play and enjoy and develop. It's like just totally just rewiring all of that. But we are going to fix it.
Me, you, Christina, Jonathan, maybe Jean Fangy and Catherine Price.
Yes, yes. And many others that we cannot name.
Yeah. But,
so since we're here with you, one of these amazing, you know, people, a part of this mission, working to fix this and to make this better. If you could get really creative and just, you know, just fix any problem that you see students facing, or really just, you know, people, but in college.
Yeah.
If you could just snap your fingers and make it go away, what problem would you choose first?
Relationships. I just helping our students feel more comfortable without their phones in hand, feel more comfortable talking to strangers and just being okay with looking silly and not having to worry about someone recording them, just letting them live in that moment and be really present again. And feel confident having conversations that are surface level that within an hour could lead to something more with more depth. So yeah, I think being that we're in the middle of a loneliness epidemic, as the Surgeon General announced last May, it seems like relationships, having that sense of connection, is from a health perspective, the thing that's going to keep us healthy for a long time and happy, in my opinion. Not to say every relationship's going to be a happy one, but having that close connection to at least one other person just makes such a big difference in our day-to-day, to have someone who really gets us, who we can fully be ourselves around, who is accessible to us and present with us. And just having those connections seems to have this very positive net effect on everything else.
That is very insightful. There's a reason that you are that you do what you do for Hokie Wellness. That
Oh, you're
is,
sweet.
I mean, relationships do seem to be just the lifeblood of wellness and really have that profound effect on anyone's wellness. One of the big reasons that we have you here today is because you have decided to spread your expertise on being able to create wellness digitally for campuses. And so you've actually started the Coalition for Collegiate Digital Wellbeing. Do you want to tell me about that? Like, what's your vision for this? This is personally a very exciting project to me. So, like, what is it? Tell us.
A couple of years ago, I really, as I was proposing digital well-being on a larger scale at Virginia Tech, I had sent a note to our vice president and sort of outlined all of these dreams that I had about how to do digital well-being on our campus, all of the ways we can connect with our students. And I said, and I really want to start a coalition for collegiate digital well-being, because I really started this work in 2016, 2017, looking for some sort of evidence-based program that already existed around digital well-being. And I was like, oh, there isn't one. And that's typically, like, as a public health person, I'm always like, what's the evidence base for this? So I really couldn't find one. So it was then that I started the long journey of ho seeking out to create some evidence-based interventions. And I sort of stated to our vice president at the time, I said, I really want to create this coalition for collegiate digital well-being. And I threw out these words. I guess I thought they sounded really important, but at the base level, at the easiest way, I was like, I just want to figure out how to share what I've already done and how to jumpstart other people's digital well-being efforts on their campus. Because, like, no one needs to recreate the wheel. We're already, it feels like, I already feel behind. So I want to help other people, get to the place that we're at, Sean, share the work that other people are doing, because there are a handful of us. But I just think resource sharing, brainstorming together, there's so many just brilliant people out there, and our brains together are certainly going to be more creative and more effective if we're coming together, sharing ideas, just like connecting with one another and learning from one another, like what's working on your campus, what's worked on your campus, and really creating this space where people can go to find the research that is considered best practice, or the findings that can help inform our future interventions. And the coalition is open to any professional at an institution. I don't care what country they are in. If they are able to join us, it's all going to be via Zoom. You were so wonderful and came to Virginia Tech for our mini training that we did on campus in February with a few schools and in within a 3-hour radius. So I would love to host more on-campus things for folks who are able to get here. That was super awesome, even in that
That
moment,
was
like to come together with other campuses that are raising their hands to say, yeah, I want to do this too. So our kickoff for the event is actually on Friday, May 3rd, which is Global Digital Wellness Day. And it'll be 12 to 1 Eastern time. We're going to put the registration link in the bio here, right?
this
And
will be in the description. Yes, the
yeah,
link to
description.
the registration form.
Perfect, perfect. And our vice president for student affairs, who's done a lot of support financially and professionally for digital well-being at Virginia Tech, is coming on to do a Q&A with me. Really, Dr. Frances Keene she's amazing. And really, we're gonna talk about like what made her say yes to supporting the efforts so that other folks can speak to those key points and use them when they're presenting to their stakeholders on campus. So I hope to share a slide deck, like a basic skeleton slide deck that folks can take and use to present to their stakeholders, an action planning worksheet as we're on the call. And then we'll be conducting some focus groups this week with our students just to keep our content fresh and really relevant. So I'm going to be sharing some assessment results of the work we've done this year and some key findings from those focus groups so that folks can hear what's going on here and maybe get some inspiration. They're welcome to use those messaging. Every campus feels a little bit different, so if they want to ask their students the same questions, I'm game for that too. But it's really a space to share and learn together so that we can push digital well-being on the college campus further ahead together.
Wow, that is so awesome. I feel like any person who's involved in collegiate faculty that's listening right now is probably watering at the mouth. And so this is not limited to Virginia. I could go to University of Central Florida, tell people at my, local college,
Absolutely.
about this, and they could join and learn from you guys at Virginia Tech.
Absolutely. You could be in University of Central England, and not that that's a thing, but
Yeah. Okay.
it's still, it's going to be an okay time to join it. So everyone is welcome for sure. This is, I don't want to be an information hoarder. I want to be a share far and wide.
Wow, that is so awesome. Okay, Lori, thank you so much for everything that you're doing for this initiative. It means the world to me as, a student that has gone through all of this, that there are people like you out there that really genuinely care about this, that care about students and, their ability to be digitally well in this challenging time of technology. And it's just amazing to know that you're out there doing amazing things. So thank you.
Sean, thank you. Gosh, we just are so lucky to have a student like you also just leading this initiative and being so brave to stand up to the status quo and say, I think we can do better. I want to do better, and I'm going to help us do that. And not only to do it on your a local campus, but to be serving so many campuses in Florida right now and doing everything you can to extend your reach into other universities. It's just phenomenal work, and I'm such an honor to know you.
Well, thank you so much, Lori. This was awesome. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. It was a blast.
Thanks for inviting me. It was super fun to see you.
Absolutely. All right, until next time.
Awesome. Bye, Sean.